Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
We've got three topics that we've kind of universally agreed on, so we're going to look at, first and foremost, whether we think FSG have been good owners. We want to look at, like, what type of owners we would be comfortable with or what we're looking for in any potential buyers. And what did we say the third one was?
Are you excited?
Yes, that was about it. See how much I'm not. About that, I've not thought about that at all. Yeah, and whether there's potential excitement that comes with this as well down the line. Look, let's dive into it. By the way, if you're a Club Legend subscriber, please do use the Discord. The live show chat channel is open right now. We've already got the Scouser, XA Hart, Scott T, all dropping their opinions in so far. We'll read through some of them as we go along as well. Dan, yeah, FSG, 12 years at the helm.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's coming to an end, or the beginning of the end, certainly. And yeah, it's a very simplistic question for what I think is quite a complex answer. But in your opinion, have they been good owners?
I think you'd have to say yes. And we touched on this earlier upstairs. I think the best thing they ever did was right at the start in terms of taking over the club when we were in the doldrums. We were in a really bad state and nobody quite knew what was going to happen. There was fears about the club's existence, quite frankly. It was really bad. So the greatest thing they ever did for this football club was take over. Absolutely no two ways about that. But again, I said it earlier on, I think they've took us so far, time and time again, off the pitch and on the pitch. And you think, yeah, they're doing really great work. They get sort of 90% of the way there and then they let themselves down in one way, shape or form. Whether it be they don't reinvest and they don't kick on and go again. They say, oh, this is great, we're winning stuff, but we won't double down on that. They stop. And they've done the same off the field as well because they do really good stuff. And then they've let themselves down by a really poor decision as well.
Yeah. It's I really struggle with it because, and there's a good point actually made in the Discord here by, excuse me, when I find that one just very quickly. Oh yeah, Scott T says, when taking where we were and where we are now into consideration, I don't think you can say they were bad owners. And then he mentions the dodgy decisions, which I guess we'll come to in conversation. But that's kind of the tricky point for me. If I was coming at this more recently, then I'd have a bigger problem, but I find it really hard personally to detach the whole where Liverpool were and the situation that we were in when they came into the club. So the before and after, it matters to me in my evaluation of it.
And me, you know, we were foolish to believe you could get by and stay dominant forever playing five-a-sides and boot room scenario, and we didn't build the infrastructure and take it forward to the 21st century. And that's the reality of where the Moores family decided to move out and find investors who could take the club forward financially. We know how that went with Gillette and Hicks. We know the mess that ensued and followed on from that. And if you look at the club now, you look at the ground, you look at the infrastructure in place, the likes of facts that we've had, Michael Edwards, we've got Julian Ward, we've got Peter Moores, you've got the AXA. You know, they've had to speculate, to accumulate, to do two things. One, to drag Liverpool kicking and screaming into the 21st century and make them compete again. Mm-hmm. And the second one is grow their investment, because this is all about return on investment for FSG. And we've always known that. They never said they would compete financially with the big spenders in the transfer market. There's no quote that ever says that. So I think if you take it and look at it in isolation now and look at Liverpool Football Club as an entity, it is the strongest on and off the pitch it's ever been. Mm-hmm. And Forbes' value of the football club tells you that much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, that's the thing with all of this is I think there's a dangerous rhetoric to get lost in. And I think, and this stems from, I thought Neil Atkinson summed up really, really, really well when he did the podcast with us the other day about how you don't want owners' names on banners, and you don't want them to be like, you know, like you don't want them to be like celebrity figures associated with your club. It was tainted a bit by how much of a hatred there was towards the previous owners, mm-hmm. and then how horrendously Hicks and Gillette had run the football club, and how angry that left the fan base and in the fight for getting them out of the club. And what developed out of this, and I'm glad it went away, but this idea that FSG saved Liverpool has become a bit of an expression. And I can get why, in the literal sense, I can understand the meaning behind it, but I don't like the heroic connotations that come with it, as though somehow, you know, like Superman saves people, doctors and nurses save people in the real world, you know, there are real heroes. They didn't. They performed a shrewd, canny piece of business by picking up a very, very valuable asset on the cheap, which had the knock-on impact of saving Liverpool from potential points deductions and relegation, and you know that because that's how dire the financial situation and the situation on the pitch was at the time. But it was that's the thing is I see that as a stick beat with people. I said they saved and people, they never saved, and the truth lies was they didn't really save Liverpool, because I think that, again, it carries just that word carries a lot of weight. It wasn't an heroic, selfless act from Nesvi/FSG. It was a bunch of very, very smart investors who clued themselves up into that world and bought a business asset, which has led us to this situation where they could turn over, they could make a £3.5 billion profit on it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was always their end game, wasn't it? Like Steve references there. There was absolutely no two ways about it. They are very shrewd business people, and they got in at the right time from their perspective, didn't they? But like you say, it was fearful at the time for Liverpool fan perspective. We didn't quite know what was happening. We never experienced much like it before in our lifetime. So for them to come in and everything kind, the shift to be righted again, if you like, it was obviously a good experience. But yeah, I think they were, like Steve said, they were never likely to sort of compete. That was never their promise. That was never their will. And them getting out now shouldn't come as a huge surprise, because the profit on their investment is absolutely skyrocketed. It's as good as it's ever going to be, potentially. So the fact that they might be sort of manoeuvre themselves into position to move on shouldn't really surprise anyone.
Yeah, and I think when you go back to the sort of to the start with them, their regime has been plagued by mistakes. Mm-hmm. Plagued. And I don't know. The problem is... I don't understand the context enough, and by that I mean, it's like when you talk about the stats of a footballer, and you could say, well, like, you know, unless you're an expert, I mean, goals and assists stack up, and appearances, really easy stats to track, and very basic things to understand. But when you talk about, like, again, like, the slightly more complicated statistics, so when you get into the realms of XG and pressing stats and all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. it's great when you see, pass completion became obsessed with pass completion under Brendan Rodgers, as an example, without really, he's got a 90% pass completion. So, well, I actually didn't know who the other best midfielders in the league. What were their pass completion stats? How do you contextualise that alongside the rest of football? So when I say plagued by errors, I don't know whether they are, or it was a perfectly normal amount of errors compared to ownership groups of other Premier League clubs. But my overriding sense with the Liverpool blinkers on was, and it was once mentioned by Scott T there, and we'll just run through them. Handling of Dalglish, ticket prices, Super League. Mm-hmm. It's just a few. I'm sure we can name more in addition to that.
Oh yeah,
furlough and staff. Yeah. Trying to trademark the name Liverpool, mm-hmm. all these kind of things. They've got tons of things wrong along the way. We have to be absolutely clear about that. Again, there's no idea that these are like shining knights who've been perfect by the letter, perfect owners or perfect Liverpool owners.
I think the criticism you can level at them is they don't read the room particularly well in terms of the football club. And its fan base. And whilst they came along at exactly the right time for us and the right time for them, so it kind of works in that regard, doing things like ticket prices and trying to trademark Liverpool and then being sort of founder members of the conversation around the European Super League challenges everything that the true Reds believe to be, goes against the fabric of what we do as a football club.
Yeah.
They've got that really, really wrong. And I think credit to them to come out and recognise it, but they had to do that. So that apology by John Henry is a massive PR stunt to basically recover the ground. In that regard, there's loads of room for criticism. In that regard, there's lots of room for our fans to be very disappointed with how they've conducted themselves. That, for me, was more a case of how do we get the last final pounds out of this project? So we try and trademark the word Liverpool. That adds massive value to the brand that they created. And that's what they created. They've created a brand. Yeah. They didn't buy scarves and stand on the cop and sing "You'll Never Walk Alone." They came for the money.
Yeah.
And we all recognise that. So, yeah, they've not done everything well. They've done some things, really, really bad things, which have been, you know, caused uproar amongst the fans. But they have listened because they had no choice to listen. So given a little bit of that back to the fans to say, we will listen to you, but the damage of not listening to the fans was greater than pursuing their ideas, I suppose.
The problem with those, and I can understand, is that it breaks trust.
Mm. Yeah.
And it erodes trust in some and breaks it for others, because everyone's got their own personal breaking points when it comes to these things, whether your own set of personal morals or just or whatever. And it because the thing is, let's play devil's advocate on this. I think I do kind of believe this, is that after a while you look at a body of behaviour and say, well, if you keep pushing these buttons without really consulting before. Now, the Super League is the big one for me on this, mm-hmm. by the way. Because I honestly, when I look at the furlough thing, I look at it from how many actual British businesses furloughed staff. Loads of them did. And it was about, if you were just a retail chain, loads of retail chains furloughed staff. Liverpool should have been able, I think, to furlough like the retail staff and the mm-hmm. people working on the kiosks and all that. Because in that regard, that's a retail business, the same as any other. I thought that was a bit hyped because people just love to take pot shots at footy. But the Super League stuff was borderline unforgivable. Mm. And by that, I mean it was a decision that was taken removed from the football club, and it was all removed from the football people at the club. It was taken at a top level, on almost on another continent, away from everything, and done so almost underhandedly that it makes you think. And when you add in things like ticket prices, and you add in the other bit, the Project Big Picture, and all those kind of stuff, it speaks to, well, if we weren't such a strong fan base and didn't have Spirit of Shankly and didn't have such a history of like trade unionism and that kind of stuff within the city, would they have gotten away with it? Mm. And would they have reversed it? And the answer is no, which says they're not great people, they're not great owners, they would it's like a Scooby-Doo villain. I'd have gotten away with it if it wasn't for you pesky supporters.
Yeah.
And I can understand why that's the kind of thing that would have turned tons of people against them, because you see behind it, it's like, well, yeah, you've U-turned, but it's like saying you got caught cheating and go, well, and then apologise, like, well, I'm sorry, but would you have stopped, or would you have apologised if you'd not been caught?
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, if they'd been able to get the Super League over the line, there'd have been no consultation. It would have just been a thing. You know, we very nearly ended up out of the Premier League because of a decision that was taken in Boston, and not one that was in the thing. So that's where I have a lot of sympathy for people who've got no time for the owners.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on there. The minute they signed on the dotted line for that Super League, and again, like Steve says, they were one of the founder members. They weren't just sort of ad hoc involved. They were front and centre of it, if you like. The minute they got us involved in that, it was, for many, I think, the straw that broke the camel's back, because you add up all the other stuff that they've done, the decisions they've made. And I think the point, moreover, is, like we've all said already, they are businessmen. They're not in it for the love of the football club. They're in it for dollars. They're in it for money. And that's what it all boils down to for me. And the reason being, if we hadn't have sort of kicked up a fuss about any of these issues, whether it be the Super League, the tickets, obviously we remember the walkout with the tickets and all that sort of stuff. If all that wouldn't have happened, every single one of these bad decisions that they made would have just gone through. Yeah. And we'd be living it now. We'd be living the Super League. We'd be living higher ticket prices, etc., etc. So you're dead right. It doesn't boil down to them seeing the error of their ways and going, oh no, we've messed up here. Like in-house, this is seeing the reading of the room and the reaction and going, oh no, we can't do this because we're going to lose so much power. And I think the Super League one in particular, you said, Paul, that it happened on a different continent, happened almost blindsided the fan base, but it seemed like it blindsided like the Klopp and the players. Because we remember the game at Leeds, and that is what is so unforgivable for me when it comes down to the owners, because you can say what you like about them, but when the figurehead of the football club clearly has no idea what's going on in Jurgen Klopp, that's a big no-no for me.
Yeah, no, and that's part and parcel of it, as much as he's been very glowing. He's been very effusive in his you know, when he talks about his relationship with the ownership group. I've been. And again, everyone is nice to the boss. You wouldn't be, you're not a prick to your boss because you're on a hand to nothing if you are that. But, you know, I've been within a handful of meters of him talking to them. I couldn't hear what they were saying. I very nearly did a sketch where I had the video of it and I was going to do voiceovers for it, but never got around to that. But like, it was a really cordial, sort of, you know, jovial sort of friendship there. We don't see him with Mike Gordon. We don't see Mike Gordon often at all. But you know, all the reports come from JNOs is them two are very, very close. They've got a beyond a business relationship now because they do like get on that well. They do have their views align on a whole number of things from football to life. But you're right, is that even he's clearly had some issues, and I think we're starting to see the cracks in it. In the last month or so, when he started to, and it depends on how you interpret this a bit, Steve, because when he talks about there's clubs that can just do what they want, you can take that as like, well, I don't think that's a call for him to want to just to be owned by another club who can do what they want, but it was a fair assessment, and it was of the football landscape a bit. But when he starts to talk a little bit, we could maybe have done with X, Y, and Z, you do start to sense the frustrations. We've all got a limited shelf life in our life. We've got so many years on the yeah. earth. He lost one because of the COVID season in terms of Liverpool being a productive outfit. There would be a frustration, I think, from him this season, looking at what he's got available and having to have a season of fighting to make things work rather than a smoother process if Liverpool had been able to just chuck a little bit more money into the transfer kitty, for example, in the summer.
Yeah, take the Tchouaméni transfer, for instance. That Real Madrid paid a lot more for him than we were ever envisaged we would pay. So are we a club that puts their eggs in one basket, or are we a club with limited finances? He's never really bridged that notion or challenged that ideology in the fan base. He's kind of, you have to, because there is employers at the end of the day, and it wouldn't be good for his career to sit there and do a Pochettino and rip the regime to bits and say, I'm not happy with this, I'm not happy with that. That doesn't get anyone anywhere. But you're right. Certainly when he said to the journalist, you're right, we needed somebody in the summer. There's the first signs that he recognises that too. But he's a very philosophical man, so he's probably the most philosophical man in football right now.
Well, laissez-faire is the idea of that, isn't it? Like, well, this is the reality, this is where we are. I could sit and cry about what's not happened, and I can stress about what might happen. Yeah. The reality is here we are, and it's what I've got to deal with. Yeah. Which, again, I suppose you'd argue makes him the perfect manager for owners like this, because he's not the kind of guy who's going to go, who's not going to run up the flagpole and kick off. I see that as a positive, but I can understand how that might be seen as a.
But that's why the fans take it upon themselves to do it for him. And yeah. That's why we have this issue with FSG in terms of they should have spent this and they should have spent that. Mm-hmm. Let's not forget they've been building Liverpool up to a point where they can get maximum revenue. Lending or giving Liverpool hundreds of millions of pounds to improve their squad reduces the value of the football club in a roundabout way. They haven't done what the Glazers did. We don't have a £600 million loan, which we paid £1 billion worth of interest on that loan. So they've got lots right, but the things they've got wrong, they've got really wrong, and I can understand the frustration amongst the fan base.
My problem with this, and I think where FSG might be on this when it comes to how good owners they are, and we've got some really, really, again, some really solid comments on this. We've got one from Titchley. On the basis of running a business, 100% brilliant owners, you go as far to say that as a business that followed FFP, they were probably the best at it. Mm-hmm. But on a football level, understanding what football means to us as fans, what fans have to go through, then they cocked it. And I think that's the thing. On the business side, I think, is the interesting point of this. And where football has been totally skewed, and our view of football has been totally skewed, and it's by two of the three clubs that Jurgen Klopp mentioned the other week. And obviously Newcastle are new to the party, so we can't put any blame on them. Blame can go back to Roman Abramovich buying into Chelsea, but in what they certainly had a big impact on this. But PSG in particular are the ones responsible for the sort of, I would say, plight when football's at its most valuable of all time. But the situation that we've seen faced down, and actually the reason why the Super League was being forced into action, and why the Spanish clubs in particular were so keen on it, because there was a keeping up with the Joneses element to it. And we've got it with Man City, and we're looking at Man City. And when you just watch football and you don't pay attention to the top line stuff, you just look at Man City winning all the time, mm-hmm. and you look at the whole thing, and you look at them being able to just go, well, that £50 million player is not worth, bin him off and we'll buy another £50 million mm-hmm. player, and they're able to just, they're able to just go, yeah,
doesn't matter, does
yeah,
it?
We'll have a look and move on, mm-hmm. as opposed to having to squeeze every ounce out of every single asset that you own to get the most out of it. But you look at to go back to the PSG point, the reason why Barcelona are goosed is because Paris Saint-Germain exists. Yeah. And because what they were able to do, their business plan was to inflate the market. Because what you do is, you then, because you can afford whatever you want, you just drive others out of business for it. It's like if you know, you see this in like, it's like Tesco's versus your local corner shop. Mm-hmm. You know, go into Tesco's and see how much it costs to buy 6 jam donuts. And it costs like 80p. Mm. And you imagine if you were a corner bakery, how on earth are you able to do that? And they're not just making 8, they're making 200. You know what I mean? And a local bakery, you can't compete because mass availability of products and collective bargaining power and all that kind of stuff makes it much easier for supermarkets to force those out of business. But if you're trying to fight against them, it's John Henry versus the steam driving machine, you know, that kind of stuff. You're going to just kill yourself.
Yeah.
And that's where I think all of our understandings of where world football have gone arse about tit is because we're now left in a world where we are having to question our morals and maybe having to throw our morals onto the fire just for the chance, and that's all there is, by the way, of being slightly more competitive against Manchester City and being more competitive against PSG's and Real Madrid's in the Champions League, which is my real overall concern with this.
Yeah, that's a frightening prospect of it all, isn't it, really? But yeah, I think FFP was absolutely integral to the FSG ownership.
Yes.
They've almost said that themselves. I think Jurgen Klopp has touched on the point as well. And we've been very fortunate in many ways, and I mean many ways, to have Jurgen Klopp at the helm throughout this period, because any other manager would have been toys out the pram quite a long time ago, I think, with what was going on, and they'd have walked years ago, potentially. But Klopp is the perfect man for a working FFP model. It simply doesn't work.
Yeah.
And our owners are also the perfect owners for that model. Again, doesn't work, it's broken, hasn't worked since day one. Therefore, you have Man City's and PSG's of this world can just dictate what happens and just run the whole market. And that's where we fell short, isn't it, in many ways, because we haven't been able to keep up with the Joneses. And that's another reason, I think there's a few reasons, but that's another reason I think FSG are kind of, well, they are looking to get out right now, because I think they know it's run its course. Mm-hmm. They know FFP can't be put into practice. It doesn't work. And they've gone, that's too rich for our blood. Yeah. We can't continue to do that. And I don't really want to. They might have the best interests of the club at heart in many senses by going, listen, we can't afford to keep up with what's going on in the world, so someone else can have a go. Because for us, we've made our profit, we've made our money, we'll get out now while we can. Someone else can try and keep up with them.
Yeah, no, and again, there's a bit where it goes next, and we'll come on to that in topic two, of course, like who comes in and what we'd like to see in that regard. But, you know, I'd like to hope there's a little bit of sentiment in there for having been involved for so long in terms of who it gets handed over to. But you're right, if you look at it from a pure business perspective, why would you want the Premier? I don't understand why you'd want to buy a Premier League team unless you wanted it as a sports washing vehicle. Because I don't see where the money's to be made. The only money to be made is in how they've done it. And again, where it gets a little bit lost sometimes, I still see people saying, "Oh, they haven't taken money out of Liverpool." In fact, they have actually put money into the club. They have actually, in loans. There was loans to build the stands. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For the
training. Been good at that respect. Kind of stuff. Really
yeah, exactly. You know, it's part of a portfolio. So it's one of those, like, it's those really hard things to follow, because most of us look at what value is and go, it's money that you've got in your bank. It's money you can take out and spend on things. Whereas your actual net worth, in a business sense, is about what you own. And that's how you value a person or a company or a group. And so I can't understand why you would want to. You wouldn't want to. I don't think you'd want to singularly own Liverpool, because there's four Champions League places. It might go to five in the next year or two with the change of rules. But there's still legitimately now, because of Newcastle in particular, there's a chance City and Newcastle are now two permanent fixtures in those places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then you're fighting for three. So of those three, and even if we just look at it this season, we have a constant debate over who's going to finish in the top four, and everyone goes, City defo. So there's three places. And those three places are between, right now, Arsenal, Manchester United, Tottenham Hotspur, Chelsea and Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
That's five football clubs, four the remaining three for the remaining three places, and that doesn't factor in Newcastle are going to start to be in that conversation, and there's a bunch of other clubs who've been on the fringes of it who come in and out. So like a Leicester coming out of nowhere and win the title and take up one of those places that one season, rare, but it happens. Mm-hmm. Every now and again someone gets, I mean Leicester two seasons on the bounce were a point away from finishing in the top four, so then there's a chance there's six clubs for three places. And that money is so huge by comparison to being in the Champions League to not being in the Champions League. I don't understand why any entity that isn't treating it as a plaything, or it isn't stupid, or it isn't doing some sort of dodgy leverage thing where they'll be like Alex and Gillette, where you're just not going to... It's a huge gamble. A huge gamble, because if you do fall out, and there's every chance, it's a sport. It's not like it's not a certainty where you get to physically move the assets around and then you end up in that. It's not as simple as buy best players, win more trophies. It can be a bit like that, but it's not, because it's football, and the beauty of football is that any team can beat any team on their day. So that's what I think is, and that's why I think in some regards I think they've conducted themselves pretty well. The fact that they've made it a self-sustaining business in that regard, and they clearly haven't done it as a cash grab to steal money or to sell like the land surrounding Anfield. Because God, I asked Coventry City, by the way, what it's like to have owners who take your stadium away from you.
Yeah.
You know, like that Sisu Group that owned Coventry, like it's an absolute disgrace what's gone on there. And there's loads more examples.
Blackpool beforehand, sorry, just saying.
You're right. FSG have maximise the investments, the return on investment for Liverpool. Not going to be worth too much more in any guys going forward anytime soon. And all roads for everything they've done, and you mentioned the stands, and I get that, and the loans, all roads to everything FSG lead back to where we are today and the top figure they can get for the football club. Mm-hmm. And they've never hidden that, and we've always known that. I guess Liverpool Football Club is slightly different to, say, Chelsea in that regard, in that if you buy Liverpool Football Club as an Arabian prince, for instance, you're buying it for the status of owning Liverpool Football Club and one of the biggest football club brands in world football. If you're buying Chelsea, you're buying Chelsea to buy their heritage, to buy their history, to buy whatever they become in the next 20, 30, 40 years, if you choose to keep it that long. In Liverpool, you're buying a ready-made marketing machine that's got heritage, it's got history, and it's the kudos. So an individual person with 50 billion could quite easily buy it as a rich man's toy, similarly to what Abramovich set out to do with Chelsea, but without the need to buy your history.
And but that's a huge danger for me, because again, look at Chelsea. At the minute, we're still living in like the aftermath, the embers of the Abramovich era. You know, that club is still actually being sustained by what Roman Abramovich did. You know what I mean? The Todd Bowley's not had enough time to put, and they've not invested, they've not put enough new players in there yet for it to not, it's still Roman Abramovich's football club. They've just added a few bells and whistles in the short term. It's that, if it is the plaything of one person, then we're back on this cycle. We always will be, no matter who owns it. It's always going to be a temporary thing, because we're the fans, we're going to stick around forever, and that's the most important part. Although that is the thing that will come into question depending on who then takes over. How many fans will be able to stomach if it goes to completely the wrong hands? And that's my thing on this, is that I can't state this enough. I just honestly don't have a strong opinion on FSG. I really don't. I certainly don't have. I don't harbour deep rooted like nastiness or antipathy towards them. Like, I reserve that for very, very few people and institutions in life. The Conservatives, Manchester United Football Club, and all of their footballers, past and present. You know what I mean? Nazis.
Great call.
Nazis. You know what I mean? Like people who abuse children. You know what I mean? These are the kind of people you should be hating in life.
Absolutely.
Apologies to Manchester United fans, by the way.
Not the others.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
But, you know, so And again, when you look at it, and I look at it from a sporting perspective as well, because that's what a lot of these debates are centered on. This, and I think this is where the most important debate will lie. Because the counterpoint I'm seeing, and I'm seeing it in a sense from like, I think it's the Scouser here in the Club Legend saying, he says, I totally understand what you've been talking about. You know, the idea of like it. Keeping morals, he said, but right now I'm just like, fuck it. And there's lots of people saying the only way we can kind of compete now is just to take the big money and run with it. All of the counterpoints I'm seeing are all based around trophies. Yeah. They're all based around success. So we want to guarantee Liverpool's place at the top table. And I don't think there's a single Liverpool fan who doesn't want to see Liverpool as the team that wins every trophy every year. Mm-hmm. And which is quite funny because we're rallying against, I always find the irony of rallying against the people who own the football club when we come closer than any other team in sporting history to winning every trophy that you can win in a year, by the way. But that's ha 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 to achieve. When I look at what's been won in the time that they've been in charge, mm-hmm. and there's been 7 Premier League winners in the last 12 years, one of them being us, it's been one that's been, you know, obviously they come in at the tail end of the Manchester United. So Man United have won 2 league titles, City have won 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I think, in that time. Chelsea have picked up a couple, Leicester have got 1, and obviously we've got 1 as well. I might be slightly getting the math wrong on that, but if you're watching that, you can see it on the screen. In terms of the 5 Premier League winners, 7 Champions League winners in that time. Mm-hmm. So of that, Real Madrid, Chelsea, Bayern Munich, us, Barcelona. I think I've named all of them. Oh, no, sorry. I'm getting this so wrong. It's the other way round. Apologies. It's one or the other. Just count them out. I had this bit. I was working this out in my head while we've been talking, and I've catastrophically cocked this up. The point is that... And when you look at it as well, and I would contend that it doesn't really matter because you can only count the silver you've won. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these arguments do fall down. If you're wedded to the idea that a transfer, one transfer can solve all of your problems, or 2 transfers or 3 transfers, then seeing Liverpool losing in finals is seen as a failure of recruitment. Mm-hmm. Whereas, and I think if you ask Jurgen Klopp this as well, to be perfectly honest, I think, it, you know, when you boil it down to one game of football, he'll always believe that he'll win it. You can win one game of football. You just can't, because we've done it plenty of times. You know, if it was meant to be that way, Barcelona should have wiped the floor with us in the semi-final. You don't get through those kind of situations. AC Milan should have absolutely, I mean, they did, but didn't. AC Milan should have walked us in 2005. But the thing is, you can engineer wins in one-off games of football. So as much as I don't count losing the Europa League final and the League Cup final in Jürgen's first season, I don't count them as trophies. I don't count Kiev as a trophy. I don't count Paris as a trophy. I don't. But there is a sliding doors scenario in all of those football games where, like, we lose the League Cup on pens, you know, in his first season. We're winning the game against Sevilla. You know, Daniel Sturridge scores an absolute fucking belter. We run out of steam and all these kind of things. Paris, again, it's a one snapshot goal in the midst of a much bigger, more problematic thing going on around. Losing Mo Salah in the final in Kiev. Mm-hmm. Some of these key things, sometimes they go for you and sometimes they go against you. From Tottenham's perspective, they'd be looking at going... I spoke to 2 Tottenham fans at the weekend, and they still are bitter about the penalty decision in the first minute. Yeah. And you would see that as a small moment that goes against your football club that hampers your ability to win. Mm. And that's what my take on all this is. A bit like, We've been competitive with silverware. I don't believe that the recruitment, because it's an unprovable thing. So I'll back on my general belief in football. We could be sat here with 2 or 3 Premier League titles and 3 European Cups and a Europa League and probably a couple more little trinkets along the way, theoretically, because we played ourselves with what we had and how we were built into those situations, and another team did us. If we were to have the same funding as Manchester City, there's every chance they still win the games that they win. There's no more guarantee of more silverware just because we've got the same as Manchester City, if that makes sense.
You're right, but sorry, I think it's that coming so close thing almost makes it more unpalatable for a lot of people, because it is that what might have been. I'm not just talking about individual matches here. I think the point on that is when you look at the seasons, the COVID year, obviously we lost all our centre-halves, those seasons almost stand out. And this one we're living in right now with the midfielders and recruitment, they're the ones people look at. They don't look at individual games and go, oh, if we had another midfielder, we'd have beat them there. That's not it for me. For me, it's more what could have been had, when we were successful, when we just won the league, when we just won the Champions League, if we'd have gone again at that point. And that's what really riles people up the wrong way. That's coming so close time and time again. And you're right, we've been competitive over and over again, almost against the odds in many senses with Jurgen Klopp at the helm. But like I say, it's that what might have been. And had we been miles adrift more often than not of City in the years we hadn't won the league, people might just go, oh yeah, well, they're really good and we're not. The fact we were a point behind them, everyone goes, oh, what if we'd have done X,
So I on the transfer stuff, I think it's interesting, because I've always, you take time, and that's been the interesting thing about Jürgen and the ownership, is it's a bit like, just breathe and give it, judge it on a full season. Don't make huge, you know, massive analyses of what's going on mid season, because you know there's lots of stuff that happened. But I can agree with that point, and I think this is a big crux for most people in this state when it comes down to just what's being invested on the pitch. Because as much as I can look at it and go, the decision to wait for Virgil van Dijk makes perfect sense. Yeah. That is a huge win. We've bought the best centre-half in football history. And if we'd bought someone else in the summer, we wouldn't have done that. And we might have just bought another Dejan Lovren. Mm-hmm. And that might have not been able to kick on it as a result. And, you know, and again, Alisson Becker, the key big signings that we've made and waiting for them. Waiting for Ibu Konate now, a year on, or 18 months, 2 years on, really, from when we needed a centre-half, looks inspired, because I can see him being Liverpool's main centre half now for the next 5+ years. You know, we've got an heir apparent now to a great centre back pairing in Van Dijk and Matip. But that's the difference when you boil it back. Is we couldn't buy Konate in the summer when we needed a centre half, so we made do and mended, and we did it with the left back thing when we had Milner at left back for a bit, and it's. I'm laissez-faire about this, because I always say it's like, for example, when you've had kids, you stop worrying about all the birds that you never asked out, and all the missed opportunities in your life prior to that. Because once you have kids, you become aware that there are an infinite amount of circumstances that conspire towards that child existing. So you would never change a single moment. You wouldn't change it. You wouldn't damage a single blade of grass in your past for risk of not having that person in your life. So you get to detach yourself from the past. And I'm a bit like that with how Liverpool have succeeded. But an ownership group that had more money would, and like Man City, and we talked about this, the £50 million player chain, in the COVID season, would have just bought a centre-half. And then gone, yes, we want Konate, but who gives a shit? Mm. We'll just sell this player on in the summer. We'll buy Konate anyway, and we'll get rid of this guy. And that's where we've fallen foul, Steve, is that the fact that we've had to wait for the perfect player to come along, and we're in danger of doing it again this season with Bellingham, for example, or Tchouaméni, is that we are by not being able to speculate more in the transfer market, that might be the thing that's cost us the opportunity to beat City more
often. There's a couple of things there. Football fans are fickle, aren't they? So when you talk about the games we didn't win, they start looking at probability, and the probability of buying a whole load of players to pad out your squad means you have a greater chance of winning those games, and they're very quick to go back and say, we could have done this and we could have done that. Woulda, coulda, shoulda. There's no way to run a football club or be a sort of a pragmatic football fan. With regards to the second point you made there, we've never been a club that does short-term fixes. Manchester United in recent years have just had a quantity of players they can do nothing with in terms of build a system and understand passages of play and have an identity.
Yeah,
we don't go and buy Skirinar, for instance, into Milan because we need a centre-half. Just put him in there, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't matter. And you talk about Manchester City doing the defender, the £50 million thing. Yeah. Cancelo comes as part of a deal that saw a £50 million fullback in Danilo go to Juventus and money.
Yeah.
We've never been able to do that.
Yeah.
FSG have never allowed us to do that. And quite a lot of our fans wouldn't want us to do that. Mm-hmm. So you're quite right. It's the business model that you work with, and this is the thing that is going to open up and be unveiled in the future. There is a possibility we might become that very business model.
Yeah,
I think that's the advice. I think it's interesting because you mentioned United there and what they've been very scattergun in their approach. And so have Man City in a lot of senses. They've got better actually in recent years. There was a long time where City were just churning out £50 million fullbacks. It simply didn't matter. Mm-hmm. I do think, though, on that, we wouldn't be quite as chaotic in our approach. And with Jurgen Klopp, we'd always be a little bit more reserved. But if you just get, it's like you've got Klopp, you've got Jurgen Klopp, just give him that little bit extra. And with him, you can create absolutely wonderful things. And that's not to say he hasn't done already, because he has. But just, it's 90% there. I keep saying it's 90% there. Just push it that tiny bit more.
I it's funny because when I look at it, I'm a business owner. So I think of things from a business perspective as well as an emotional perspective. But as a good example of it is like, so let's say how Redmen TV's run is that we want to be a self-sustaining business. You know, we want to be able to, and we want to be able to grow. And you want to be able to add the money that and people who've watched us for years will be able to see. Where we were 13 years ago is wild the difference of where we are now. You know, we've been able to invest back in the business, invest in the equipment, facilities, all those kind of things. And it's to the point where when I initially started, it was all being funded out of my back pocket, and now it's a proper business. It's a legitimate business. But because it's also my passion project, if something comes along where it's like, oh, I actually kind of really want to do that, there are circumstances where I would be happy to fund it out of my own pocket to make things happen. It doesn't happen very often. There's no need for it to happen. But that's the thing that we've kind of lacked, of just that percentage of someone. And again, maybe it is the detachment from the sporting side a little bit that you don't want. I don't think you want someone who's hands-on too much, because honestly, when you hear stories about the Abramovich stuff, I like the fact that Jurgen Klopp has been given breathing room, give the manager trust, let him do things. It's allowed him to make more sensible decisions in what he's done. He doesn't need to constantly claw for success, and that pressure builds a toxic, negative atmosphere. That's why Conte doesn't stick around loads of football clubs. That's why Mourinho doesn't. Why Rafa Benitez combusts everywhere he goes, because he's always under. He feels the pressure more acutely, whereas if you're given time and breathing room, you can flourish more. So I think that's been a positive. But there is just that thing, if you just had someone who just was a bit more like, you know what, fuck it, go on. This summer, let's just do something wild.
Yeah.
And let's see if that gives us that little bit. Because that's what we're lacking. And that's something that FSG have lacked, I think, because I think when it comes down to a borderline with a line on a spreadsheet, it's not an emotional run thing. And I think sometimes that's helped us. I'm so sceptical when it comes to fan ownership on stuff, because we're all fucking lunatics. We would all have rioted over Kenny. None of us would have sacked Kenny Dalglish. But if you don't sack Kenny Dalglish, you don't get Brendan Rodgers, you don't put the foundations of the football style of passing play in place, and then you don't sack him and you don't get Jurgen Klopp. And it's everything has a knock-on effect. Everything leads into everything. So many decisions look mental at the time. And we're such emotional creatures around our football club that we would be at the barricades over all kinds of silly things at all hours of the day and making wild, crazy decisions. But I don't think FSG, and we'll talk about, we've still got who we want as the owners, we've still got the fun stuff, and I can get a sense of excitement. It would be nice to get someone who just puts 5% more fun back into the whole thing, and every now and again just goes, just has that moment and just goes, okay, so the budget is 100 million for this summer, but what would it, if I gave you 250, can't do this every year, but if I gave you 250 this year, what would that make a difference to what we're doing? And again, maybe that's a flight of fancy, and that's the difference between me, is I think FSG have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've been absolutely sound. I think, you know, culturally, I think, not them, because I think we have to remember that they are not Liverpool Football Club. They're just the bank that funds, you know what I mean? There's people that own it. Liverpool actually exists in a separate entity, and it's why there's nothing's really going to happen to Liverpool in the next year if it doesn't sell, because it's a self-sustaining business. Mm-hmm. Billy Hogan effectively is the guy who runs Liverpool Football Club. It's up to him, you know. The money in Liverpool stays in Liverpool, which is the beauty of it, is that any sales stuff is not going to destabilise Liverpool, except maybe if the fans lose their heads on things, it can continue to do that. But yeah, it's I think they've been okay. I think you can't detach the success they've had. They could have been a bit more switched on and a bit more in tune with the culture and all that. But it's been a brilliant ride. I don't think it's easy to say you lucked out with Jürgen Klopp. I think that feels a bit churlish to say. You know what I mean? I don't think you get to, if you're gonna criticise for mistakes, you've got to look at the positives.
And you've doubled down on that as well with new contracts as well, haven't they?
Absolutely, big money contracts.
Yeah. So they're one of the to be competing at the level we've competed. In the hat for all of the big prizes at the end of each season, we're the club that runs with the lowest losses. Mm-hmm. So the business model that's been prudent from a financial point of view, leading back to the eventual sale of the football club, I think the fans want to see clubs take a little bit more of a risk and operate a little closer to the model that not necessarily United, but the model that, say, Spurs have spent loads of money, haven't they?
Yeah.
They operate with a little bit more loss in their business, and football's one of the only businesses where you can do that.
Yeah. Just to say on this, it really shines a light on how frugal our owners are and just how risk-averse they are when the times are really hard. So when we lost all our centre-backs, we went through January, and all of a sudden we ended up with Kabak and Davis. That's when it really sort of pinpointed. And the same could be said, like I said earlier on, for this summer, pretty much everyone, and probably Klopp as well, behind closed doors, was crying out for that extra midfielder. Yeah. We did nothing, and then got Arthur Melo on deadline day on loan, and that really pinpoints it.
Also, in addition to a piss-poor start to the season, which we'll never know, because of the psychological hangover of the season before, the physiological hangover, and then injuries additionally, which I know were a shock horror. Naby Keita was injured. Who could possibly have seen that coming? But you're right. It looks a bit like it's all going tits up at once, and then you're searching for the reasons on it and stuff. But you're right. I still look at it. I look at the recruitment policy, and I said this the other day. I look at who we've bought in, and we've refreshed the defence. We've refreshed the attack. Mm. We haven't refreshed the midfield, but it's obvious and it's clear that they want to. But if you're going to do that, you want to do that at the same quality that you've done with buying Konate in and buying, I mean, okay, Kostas Tsimikas has been bought in as cover, but look how good he is for cover. Darwin Nunes, Diaz, Jota have all been brought in to refresh the Firmino, Salah, Mane front three. The next job is just there. It's like when you've decorated your house and you've gone through every room, and your living room's the last one, and it looks like an absolute shithole. Mm. It's just that, unfortunately, most of us, when we're living within our means, you have to do it as a sort of gradual process. It would be nice if we could Liverpool, because it means so much more to us, and ultimately it's not our money going into it. It'd be lovely if we could find someone to take that step beyond. Thank you so much for checking out this big debate that we've done this week. Obviously, it's the biggest talking point possibly in modern history of Liverpool Football Club. What happens next with the Liverpool ownership and what that means. The rest of the debate show is available on Red Men Plus, where we did discuss what type of owners we hope will take over custodianship of the football club, a little bit on the excitement that could be generated if they get that right. We've also got extra shows as well around this. I chatted to Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville to get their reaction to the news. And we also did a special, the FSG Apologist special, with Neil Atkinson from the Anfield Wrap. And there is a Redmen Reacts. Tons of this, and there will continue to be it when it breaks over on redmenplus.com. So if you want more podcasts, more videos, and more in-depth knowledge and insight on what's going on at Liverpool right now, then please do head over to redmenplus.com and sign up. And if you sign up right now as well, you're going to get 2 free tickets to our live show on Sunday afternoon in Liverpool. Perfect time to join us in a period of excitement, uncertainty, craziness, madness, and a World Cup as well. But hope to see you over on redmenplus.com in a bit.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.